This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, we'll learn about a Green Bay area organization that's one of just two in Wisconsin licensed to provide shelter for at-risk and homeless teens. Now, a winter storm is expected to hit Wisconsin this evening, lasting through Saturday, bringing inches of snow around the state and possibly creating dangerous travel conditions. As people prepare for Christmas this weekend, it'll be one of the busiest travel times of the year. So knowing what to expect, preparing for the worst, could be helpful if you're going to be on the road this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the weather over the next few days? Are you changing plans, travel plans right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Taylor Patterson is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Taylor, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Can you break down what we're going to be seeing over the next couple few days around Wisconsin?
Of course. So we're going to be kind of getting like a 1-2 punch sort of situation going on here. So for people across northern Wisconsin right now, you are probably already seeing the snow start to fall this afternoon. This snow will gradually move in from the northwest across the rest of the state. And we're generally expecting around 2 to 6 inches of snow across the state as a whole. You will see some locally higher amounts across central Wisconsin and then parts of northeastern Wisconsin. So that's going to be generally areas of like Forest County and Marinette County and up that way.
Now, people might hear that 2 to 6 inches number and say, not so much. It looks like there's going to be a lot of wind, and that's what worries me as far as driving conditions. What are we going to see with the wind over that time, over the next couple of days?
Yeah, and that's kind of going to be our second punch there. We're going to get some really cold temperatures and some really strong winds. We're going to get winds around gusting to around 40 to 55 miles per hour for much of Wisconsin during the late Thursday through early Saturday. And what that's going to do with this west-northwest wind is it's going to continue to blow snow across the roadways, which is going to make it very difficult to plow and clear roadways.
And we've heard from the state patrol, those are two parts of the problem, the snow, the wind, and it's going to be really cold. So our road salt and our sidewalk salt is going to be too cold for that to work. What temperatures are we going to be, are we going to continue seeing through the next few days?
Yeah, so right now we're looking at temperatures across northwestern Wisconsin tonight are going to fall into the single digits and below freezing, and then that cold Arctic air will start to push across the rest of the state towards the southeast, and temperatures down in Kenosha are going to start out at 30 tomorrow, but by tomorrow evening they're going to be down in the single digits as well. And what's going to happen is those temperatures will just continue to fall, and we'll see temperatures below freezing throughout much of the day on Friday. And then with the winds, we're going to have wind chills right around negative 35 to negative 15 statewide.
And people may be hoping to or planning to travel beyond Wisconsin. What are we seeing around the rest of the Midwest? Are we getting the worst of it, or is there worse to be found if we leave the state?
Ironically enough, if you are headed east towards Michigan, it's actually going to be a little bit worse there due to some lake effect snow. As you start to head west, since conditions are already starting, we're already starting to see snow across much of the western areas. If you are headed west, you'll eventually kind of start to drive out of that snow. But it kind of just depends on when you're planning on leaving.
Talking to Taylor Patterson, meteorologist with the National Weather Service, looking at the snow, the wind, the cold over the next few days, unfortunately, right smack in the middle of one of the biggest travel seasons of the year. You can join in if you have a weather question, or coming up, we'll talk to a state safety expert. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you looking at revising your travel plans over the next few days? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I've seen the phrase bomb cyclone, which is new to me, just a few years ago being thrown around. Is this what's going on? And if so, what is a bomb cyclone?
So a bomb cyclone is just, I guess, an interesting way of describing a low pressure system that is rapidly increasing in strength as it moves east or northeast. This is a very common occurrence when you start to talk about nor'easters out for the New England states, But for here in the Midwest, we're looking for very specific conditions, and normally it's storms coming right out of the Colorado Rocky area that tend to bring us these type of bomb cyclogenesis. And basically what that means is it's just a rapidly intensifying low pressure system. So it typically will mean some heavier moderate snowfall.
And how, and I know sometimes weather, it's really easy to predict what a storm's going to do next. Sometimes there's a lot of variation and unpredictability. How confident are we in our current predictions with this one?
Right now, we're fairly confident in generally seeing around that 2 to 6 inches of snowfall. The question kind of comes in when you start to talk about locally higher amounts. So I briefly alluded to some higher totals across the northeast part of the state, and some of that will be due to lake effect snow and then snow showers wrapping around the backside of the low as it starts to leave the Midwest. And a lot of that, like, uncertainty on the higher end is just how long this snow will last. If it starts to linger into Friday morning, you could get some locally higher amounts greater than 6 inches. But as far as the wind, we're pretty confident here on the wind on the backside and the cold on the backside. We'll have some really strong Arctic air moving in, so it's going to get really, really cold as we head into the holiday weekend.
And what are we looking for on the other side of this? As you mentioned, we've got the snow, the wind persisting after the snow, the cold persisting after the wind and snow. Do things look any better warming up, clearing up the next week or so?
As we start to head into early next week, so like Monday and Tuesday, you will start to see your temperatures start to improve. Looking ahead to Tuesday right now, I see temperatures predicted to climb back into the 20s and teens for much of the state during the day. So even though we are going to be seeing some cold and bitter temperatures over the weekend, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Rosie is with us in Ashland. Rosie, what's going on there now?
Well, I had been told years ago about a rule of 30, something about exposed skin freezing within 30 seconds at maybe it's 30 below.
Interesting. So a safety precaution there. And Rosie, I know I was looking at the Superior weather earlier. They're already seeing snow there. Do you have snow coming down already in Ashland?
Honey, I'm blind. I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for calling in and sharing the weather rule, Rosie. I appreciate that. Taylor, is the Weather Service issuing various kinds of safety advisories for dealing with the cold and wind and snow?
We've been looking at basically potentially looking at wind chill advisories and warnings for our area down in southern Wisconsin. It's likely that as we get through the snowfall that there could be some additional wind chill headlines that start to pop up across the state. I mean, right now, a wind chill advisory threshold is negative 20 to negative 35, and so it's not entirely out of the question to hit some of those thresholds over the next couple of days.
Taylor, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Taylor Patterson, meteorologist for the National Weather Service. She joined us to talk about the upcoming weather we'll be experiencing here in Wisconsin, snow, wind, and cold, as people were planning anyway to travel for Christmas. Up next, we'll continue talking about the upcoming snowy and windy weather with a Wisconsin safety expert who can fill us in on how to prepare for our plans over the next few days. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you taking extra precautions? Are you changing plans? Do you have questions for the state's emergency management department? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up our conversation on the upcoming snowstorm this week in Wisconsin. Andrew Beckett joins us now, Public Information Officer for Wisconsin Emergency Management. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you want to tell us about your preparations, your travel plans, if you are changing them, if they've been changed for you already by airport cancellations. Let us know, 800-642-1234. Andrew Beckett joins us now. Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Rob, thanks. Great to be here.
For people who were hoping to drive over the next few days to go to maybe a Christmas gathering, what is the word? What's the suggestion from emergency management right now?
Well, really, first and foremost, we want to encourage people to consider changing plans if necessary, especially if they were planning to travel on Friday. Really, with these blizzard-like conditions possible, blowing snow, extreme cold temperatures, it's not a situation where you want to run the risk of getting stranded somewhere. And we really encourage people to maybe re-examine those plans, delay them if possible, so that they're not out there during the worst parts of the storm. If you are traveling, make sure you have an emergency kit in your vehicle. Items like extra blankets, hats, gloves, non-perishable snacks, some fresh water with you, a shovel, a kitty litter or sand to get traction if you get stuck, and of course a cell phone charger so that you can call for help immediately if you were to get stranded somewhere.
And something I mentioned talking to our guest meteorologist earlier, people might hear the numbers of snowfall and think it's not such a bad Wisconsin storm. That snow plus wind plus cold, how big is that put together?
Well, really, I mean, the major concern with a storm like this is really not that level of snow, but it's the fact that, you know, most places already have snow there. And when we start seeing these winds of 30, 40, even 50 miles an hour, that will blow the snow around and it will reduce visibility. So, you know, it can be extremely dangerous for people to be on the roads because they can't see the vehicles that are ahead of them. And the vehicles behind them can't necessarily see them. So it greatly increases the risk that there could be a traffic crash of some sort. You may not also see a slick spot coming up ahead if there's still some snow cover on the roads from some of the heavier wet snow that might fall the day before.
Now, some years back, we had that situation where a bunch of people ended up effectively stalled, stuck on the highway for a long period of time after a storm. What is the advice for people who, hopefully this doesn't happen this year, but if someone finds themselves in that situation, what is the best advice for them?
Well, in any situation where you happen to find yourself stranded during a winter storm, you know, the most important thing is, you know, don't panic. Stay with your vehicle. It's the safest place for you to be in this situation, and immediately call for help. Dial 911, non-emergency number, whoever you can call for assistance. Make sure that you are finding some way to help identify your vehicle. You know, travel with a brightly colored cloth or something that you can tie to your antenna to indicate that, you know, there is a person in distress in that vehicle. And then wait for help to arrive. You know, run your car about 10 minutes every hour to keep the heat up. Make sure that the tailpipe's staying clear so that you don't get any gas backup inside your vehicle. And really just, you know, try to stay as safe as possible until help can arrive.
And advice, we've spun out, hopefully at a low speed, but we're stuck in that snowbank on the side of the road. A lot of people know the plan here. What is it?
Again, stay with your vehicle. Make sure that you're safe. You know, you want to definitely stay inside your vehicle because of the situation where you might have other drivers who could also lose control and might crash into you. You don't want to be outside of your vehicle in a situation like that because it could lead to greater injury.
Let's take things to our homes now. There is a chance, again, with snow and wind, of power outages. Hopefully we're making preparations already before the storm comes, but what kind of things do you want people to think about as they consider the risk of a power outage?
Well, you know, it's important to make sure that you have an updated emergency kit in your home, and that should include supplies with things like making sure that you have enough food and water for each member of your family for 72 hours. You have fresh batteries for any flashlights that are other devices that you might use, and that you have a plan for what you might do if you were to lose power. Make sure you know, how would you prepare food? How would you keep your family safe and warm? Really, if you were to lose power, and that includes your heat, you want to make sure that you're doing things like closing off unused rooms of the home, covering up windows with curtains, drapes, or maybe heavy blankets, and you know, opening up faucets slightly to keep pipes from freezing. And most importantly, you know, if you're running a generator, it's safely set up away from your home, at least 20 feet from any doors or windows, so that you don't have carbon monoxide buildup in your home. And also, if you're using any sort of device to heat your home, it's not designed for outdoor use only. It's approved for indoor use. So, you know, avoid bringing things like grills or propane heaters into your home that could greatly put the safety of your family at risk because of the gases that those put off.
We're talking to Andrew Beckett, Public Information Officer with Wisconsin Emergency Management. We're getting ready for this storm. There's snow, lots of wind and cold. and a big travel season, looking at recommendations on how to stay safe. That includes, we're hearing from Andrew and the State Patrol, rescheduling that drive, if at all possible. You can join in with your preparations, your changes of plan, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to our callers. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, Rob. When you mentioned somebody spinning out in a vehicle, I thought, well, somebody could end up spinning out in a vehicle, end up in a ditch, and in a blizzard, they won't be able to see where the road is. They might end up walking further into somebody's field and be lost even more.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Andrew, reinforcing the stay with your vehicle argument there.
Absolutely. Staying with your vehicle is really the safest thing you can do because it's going to provide you shelter from the elements. You know, we are looking at the potential in some parts of the state of wind chills of negative 20, negative 30 that may hit the state on Friday. That can be very dangerous. You know, I heard the caller in the previous segment mention that 30-30-30 rule, which is actually an old Air Force rule of minus 30 and winds of 30 miles an hour can freeze exposed human flesh in 30 seconds. You know, that's a situation where you definitely want to make sure that you're protecting yourself from those kinds of problems. You know, in addition to that, with cold temperatures like that, you want to watch for things like frostbite and hypothermia. That can be, you know, pretty dangerous conditions as well that can cause long-lasting health effects.
Thanks a lot for that call, Dennis, at 800-642-1234. We heard from Benjamin, who was on the road, said just flew in from Europe to the Twin Cities, headed to Madison for his wedding. Nervous about the roads, just trying to get to Madison ASAP. Stay safe out there, Benjamin, if you're still listening, and happy wedding. Might have to go virtual on this one, but best of luck to you and for the event. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Victoria joins us now in Ripon. Victoria, hi.
Hi. So we have already changed our plans. We're not going to go out for Christmas or Christmas Eve. 3 years ago, my husband and I were in a very bad car accident with the same type of situation with the snow that's coming right now. We left during very nice open skies. The snow had stopped, but the wind that was blowing the snow caused a lot of whiteouts. It was during that horrible 41 pileup. We weren't in that one, but we were in a different one that we were crashed into by numerous other vehicles because we couldn't see anything.
Wow, what a nightmare. So, Victoria, if I could ask, what is your Christmas Eve and Christmas Day plan now?
Oh, we're just going to stay home and make our own little foods, and we're going to get together at a later date and make it when the roads are going to be good and passable.
Victoria, thanks a lot for the call. Andrew, you could pull the recording from this if you want a public safety message from Victoria there.
Absolutely. And, you know, we encourage people, especially if they do have travel plans, even if things look good in their area, make sure they know what the weather looks like where they're going. You know, the state has its 511 service, 511wi.gov, and its mobile app for that service as well that shows road conditions on major routes throughout the state. So really, it's an opportunity to see what it looks like, not only in your area, but where you might be planning to go.
Victoria, thanks again for sharing your experience. Glad you're still with us after that crash a few years back. Appreciate it. Andrew, I wanted to ask you now, not about what we individuals are doing, but what kind of things is Wisconsin Emergency Management coordinating? What kind of efforts are going on, you know, in public and behind the scenes to get ready for the next couple few days?
Absolutely. In a situation like this, you know, we're working closely with our partners in other state agencies, as well as the private sector and our county and tribal emergency managers throughout the state of Wisconsin in order to make sure that they're putting their plans in action and they know who to contact if they were to need assistance with things like snow removal or power outages. You know, we really are working to make sure that everything's in place ahead of time so that if there were to be a situation that develops, you know, we can get help out where it's needed as quickly as possible.
And I know snow or no snow, there's an effort to get the message out about what to do if you see that emergency vehicle on the side of the street or it's coming up behind you or whatever. Share the rules of the road there, Andrew.
Sure, absolutely. With emergency vehicles, you really want to slow down and move over. Get out of their way so that they have the ability to get where they need to go. With plows, those will definitely be out on the road salting and clearing snow. You want to make sure that, you know, you're giving plows, you know, 200 feet of space behind them. You know, do not pass them when possible is when they're actively working. You know, you got to give them room to work so that they can do so safely.
And we try to be good neighbors in Wisconsin, Andrew, and I saw on the emergency management website the encouragement to, you know, whenever we have difficult weather, whether it's a heat wave or a snowstorm, to make sure the people in our neighborhood are checked on and doing okay.
Yeah, when we have temperatures like this, especially, you know, some people may not know what to do, especially those elderly or those who have special needs may not know what to do if they were to lose power and lose heat. So really, it's a good idea to start checking in on all your neighbors, honestly, to make sure that they're okay and have everything they need.
And then the cold, not just power outage, worries about frozen pipes and taking care of our pets. Give us a little, we've mostly focused on the snow and the wind, a little icy cold weather advice, Andrew, to leave us with.
You know, pets really should be indoors if at all possible. And if they have to be outdoors for some reason, such as if they're a farm animal or something along those lines, you know, make sure they have adequate shelter, access to fresh water, and really a way to stay safe. And really, in temperatures like this, you want to limit your time outdoors as much as possible. I know the snow can be a lot of fun for people this time of year. They're looking forward to getting out there, cross-country skiing, or even just getting the driveway cleared off. But, you know, you want to avoid situations where you're exposing yourself to extreme cold so that you can stay healthy.
Andrew, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
That's Andrew Beckett, Public Information Officer with Wisconsin Emergency Management. He talked with us today about how to prepare for the winter storm hitting Wisconsin. It's already hitting parts of the state in the west and north. It'll be moving across the state over the next couple of days. Snow, decent amount, lots of wind, making things more dangerous, especially with the big Christmas travel season coming up. Stay safe out there. If you are changing your plans, let us know what you were going to do, what you're doing instead, how you're rescheduling. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And again, everybody be safe over the next couple days. Well, always, but the next couple days in particular. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. It's been a great year for unique stories from around the state on Wisconsin life. You hear them on The Morning Show and here on Central Time as well. Producer Maureen McCollum joins the show tomorrow for a look at some of the highlights of the year and a look ahead to 2023. And if you have an idea of something you'd like to see featured by Wisconsin Life, you can join in and share that. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Hey, I'm looking for your input on something that we're looking at talking about in a call-in on Friday. I'll give the full story behind this when we actually do the segment. For now, here's my question. Is there a TV show that you grew up with or that you watch now that came out before you were even alive? This comes up sometimes behind the scenes here at Central Time when people get pop culture TV references that should have been from before their era. So, is there or was there an old show, old to you anyhow, that became part of your TV experience? Tell us about it now. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Let us know the show, when it came out, when you actually watched it, and how you watched it. You know, syndicated reruns, cable classic channel, streaming, you name it. Love to hear your answers. Email ideas@WPR.org. Pop culture news you can share. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new documentary delves into the lives of the employees at the largest producer of American flags in the country, Eder Flag in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Now, if you're homeless or housing insecure, finding shelter is critical, especially with Wisconsin winter temperatures dipping down below freezing. If you're a minor, you may not have a lot of options. House of Hope in Green Bay is just one of two places in Wisconsin that's licensed to house youth aged 17 and under. And they recently updated their facilities based on an idea from a young person staying at the shelter. Carrie Wilson is Director of Programming for House of Hope Green Bay. Carrie, welcome to Central Time.
Hi.
And Shannon Wienant is Executive Director of House of Hope. Shannon, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Shannon, let's start with you. What is the main mission there at House of Hope?
Well, House of Hope's mission is to provide a safe and supportive place where young parents and children experiencing homelessness will become confident, independent, and successful members of our community. And we have a vision that every youth knows what it feels like to have a home.
And Carrie, can you tell us about the number of at-risk and or homeless youth in the Green Bay area?
So youth homelessness looks different because it's more covert. A lot of couch hopping and staying with friends. So it's hard to quantify an exact number because a lot of it's hidden and a lot of the youth in the area are unaware of resources. So that's really what we want with our drop-in center, is to get this information out there so that youth in our area can have help navigating the resources. Currently, 1 in 5 youth experiencing homelessness are also experiencing human trafficking. 1 in 6 youth experiencing homelessness are physically assaulted.
And Shannon, before we talk more about the drop-in center, can you talk about the sort of services and outreach that youth in the Green Bay area can get with House of Hope?
Absolutely. So we provide a number of different resources. The drop-in itself is a comfortable space for youth where they can receive programming aimed at their development. There's meeting for space for youth to meet with other service providers. They can do their laundry while they're there, take a shower. They have access to storage and basic needs like eating, napping, accessing health care, mental health care, and receiving referral services to other services in the community that they may need that House of Hope does not provide. And while they're here, they'll have access to things like broadband internet, computers, electronics, video games, things to make them feel like a normal teenager. And we designed the drop-in center based on, a youth's advice, one of the youth that we were serving. And so she and a group of other young people really helped us design the space and told us what we needed to help them feel like a regular teenager in our space.
And Carrie, as Shannon mentioned, the drop-in center idea came from somebody who'd used the other services there. How important is it for you, being a program provider there, to talk to the kids themselves, the teens themselves, about what they need, what they're missing in their lives?
So at House of Hope, we really focus on being person-centered and providing trauma-informed care. And what that means is that everything we do at House of Hope is through the feedback of our clients that we're serving. So if a program isn't working, or in this case, if we're developing something, we want the voices of the people we're serving to be at the forefront of our programming so that it reflects their needs and not our interpretation of it.
Shannon, how much community awareness is there of homelessness, especially youth homelessness in the Green Bay area? I know when I talk to people who work with homeless people in other communities, sometimes there's a thought in communities that this is a big city problem. This is a Milwaukee or maybe Madison problem. Is there awareness in the Green Bay community?
I think there is a level of awareness in the Green Bay community, especially with people who, are in the schools. I know the teachers are well aware that there are issues. People that are working in youth programming, like, after school programs. But if people aren't connected to those programs or don't work in that field, they may not be aware of it. Like Carrie said, youth homelessness is such a hidden issue because they're couch hopping, they're moving from place to place, and they're staying wherever they can when they can find a place to stay. Youth, especially teens, are not usually comfortable asking for help, and it can be an embarrassing experience for them. So we don't always see it, and the community at large probably doesn't understand how big of an issue it is.
And Carrie, the drop-in center, big news for you there. Now I know, I believe it just opened last week. How's it going so far?
It's going wonderful. We've had a couple people come in and stop in and receive services. It's really a point for navigation for our youth. So they're coming in, and like Shannon had shared, they can access food, showers, laundry. And we have case management on staff that are specialized in providing youth services. We also partner with Raise the Foundation and Homebase so that our youth have choice of provider. It's not just us saying you have one or done. They have the ability to make those decisions for themselves, and we really want to empower them in doing that.
And Shannon, if somebody's listening thinking, hey, we don't have, you know, youth-specific services for kids who are at risk of homelessness in our community, we don't have a drop-in center like that, what would you say to them if they want to get the ball rolling to create something like that?
Well, House of Hope Green Bay would be a good place to reach out to. You can call us or email us, and we would be more than happy to share all the information that we have and, you know, meet with them to help them develop something like this in their community. Our goal really is to share resources and help, you know, lift up other organizations doing wonderful things with youth so that the people that we're serving are able to access what they need.
Carrie and Shannon, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Carrie Wilson is Director of Programming for House of Hope Green Bay. Shannon Wienant is Executive Director there at House of Hope. We talked to them today about providing shelter and resources for at-risk and homeless youth in the Green Bay area, including that new drop-in center just opened last week. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a holiday display in northeastern Wisconsin.
There's a teenager in Oshkosh who's had a lifelong love of Christmas lights. Brody Enley has taken that passion to new heights with a choreographed light display that's raised thousands of dollars for charity. WPR's Joe Schultz has more on how Enley uses his hobby to support the community.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Thousands of Christmas lights flicker on an Oshkosh home, lining the roof and the windows, hanging from arches over the driveway, and draped over bushes. There are even several light-up Christmas trees in the yard. The lights change to the tune of classic holiday songs.
I put this show together with just a little help from my family and friends. This year, I added RGB pixel lights to some of the outline of my house, and to start the season, I have programmed 4 new songs for a total of 10 songs that will play for your entertainment throughout the year.
That's Brody Enley in a message that plays during his annual holiday light show. The 13-year-old has used the show to raise money for local charities over the last 4 years. Enley has decorated the exterior of his parents' house since he was 7, but has been drawn to electronics for as long as he can remember.
Ever since I was very young, I mean 4 or 5, I've always been interested in electricity.
When he was 9, Enley created his first synchronized show.
It was really just me plugging lights into, I had a speaker box that would turn on and off some outlets on it and then play music aloud. But the year after that, there was a lot more involvement.
That's when Enley upgraded his show, going from 6 outlets to turn lights on and off to 16. He also began using the show to support local charities.
I really decided to do it for charity because I thought, if I'm already putting up this light display, why not help the community as well?
Since 2019, he's raised over $8,000, collected almost 500 books, and over 1,000 pounds of food. This year, all monetary donations will be doubled through a matching gift.
It's pretty crazy to me. I mean, I never could have even imagined being able to help out so many people.
Instead of a speaker outside, Enley now uses a radio transmitter with a small broadcast radius. And programming that station's playlist is his first step each year. Then, he sequences the lights on the computer to ensure they line up with the music.
I have a group that is all of the RGB lights on my house, all the color-changing lights, which I can put a fire effect on or layer them on top of each other to create more complicated effects, and then do that all to the music.
Enley says he's put in about 300 hours of work into this year's show. He even used a 3D printer to create clips that mount lights to the roof of his house. Enley says there are a couple reasons the hard work pays off. Those tuning into his personal radio station while they drive by the lights can hear why.
First, Christmas lights make me smile, and I hope my lights will make you smile too. Second, it gives me a chance to use my passion and abilities to do good in my community.
And his parents, Bronson and Cindy Enley, couldn't be more proud.
We've gotten a lot of great support from people who come and see the show and from a few corporate sponsors. But it all adds together to really help out, and I couldn't be prouder.
It's great to see his passion really give back to the community and how people respond so generously.
But with so much technical talent already, what are Enley's dreams for the future?
I have a lot of different career paths that I am interested in. The biggest ones being a computer scientist or being a software engineer.
Until then, Enley hopes to continue supporting the community with his holiday light display.
WPR's Joe Schultz brought us that story on Brody Enley of Oshkosh. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every single Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, we talked to a co-director of a documentary about Eder Flag, a company in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, that's the largest producer of American flags in the country, and learn about the people who work there. That's coming up next here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The biggest manufacturer of American flags in the country is located here in Wisconsin, Eder Flag in Oak Creek. A new documentary from National Geographic delves into the lives of the people who work there, many of whom are immigrants and refugees. Here's one of the company's managers talking about the employees there.
We have employees from all over the world.
A lot of my employees been through a lot. Maida lost everything in Puerto Rico in hurricane. Yvonne fled her country pregnant and then spent years in refugee camps in Tanzania. Milenko came from Bosnia. He was prisoner of war there. Then we have Ali, who fled Iraq with young family.
Cynthia Wade is an Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. Her latest film is the National Geographic documentary, The Flag Makers. Cynthia's co-director. It debuts today on Disney Plus, and today it advanced to the shortlist for the Academy Awards for Short Documentary. Cynthia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the documentary, congratulations on the news. Exciting to be in that shortlist for the Oscars.
It's super exciting. There are 15 films in this category, the short documentary category, and we're one of the 15, and it's really a thrilling day. It's also been released on Disney Plus today, so It's been a big day for the film.
But definitely. Now, Eder Flag, a big name in the American flag-making business, but not necessarily a household name for everyone. What led you there to make a documentary about the business, but mainly about the people who work there?
It really came from a discussion that I had with my co-director, Sharon Leese. We are filmmakers, independent filmmakers, and we often make our own films, but sometimes we band together and decide to make a film together. And so 3 years ago, we were having a conversation about our increasing discomfort of how we both felt that the American flag had been co-opted by a very narrow, specific political group. And I was just feeling like this is my country. I love the flag. I always loved the 4th of July. Why do I feel like somehow it only represents a very certain narrow political set of beliefs? And why do I feel that way? So it came from that curiosity. Ultimately, we found Eder Flag. And then when we realized it was primarily staffed by immigrants and refugees from around the world, we thought, well, that would make a really interesting film to kind of explore that. And we got access. The Flag Factory gave us access.
And we got a taste of kind of the diversity of the staff there from Radica, the sewing manager, originally from Serbia. Tell us a little more about the variety of people you met at Eder Flag.
Yeah, I mean, Eder Flag is extraordinary. There are nearly 200 employees, and they come literally from all around the globe. There are more than a dozen languages that are spoken at Eder Flag, and it really is an example of the best of our country, the best of our democracy. even if the flag makers themselves can't, they don't speak the same language, they find a commonality and they find a way to work together. Even just seeing them in the lunchroom where they're unfolding these amazing home cooked lunches where you see Moroccan stew and you see things from Bosnia and Serbia and Croatia and, you know, Puerto Rico, et cetera, et cetera. It's really remarkable to see. And so we just thought this would make such a good visual representation of what the best of our country can be, all in the walls of this flag factory.
And I got to say, Cynthia, if this had been a sitcom or a TV drama, and there'd been this cast of characters with such diverse backgrounds and unique and compelling stories, I wouldn't have bought it. I wouldn't have thought it was really plausible. But this is real. This is what you actually saw there.
Yeah. And what's really exciting about it is that the documentary has been optioned to be developed vis-a-vis the genesis of a Broadway musical.
Wow.
Which can take years. That might take 10 years or more. But in the vein of Come From Away on Broadway, a producer approached me and said, I think this could actually make a really spectacular musical. And I hadn't thought of it because I'm a documentary filmmaker. But then I thought, oh, you are right. So it's possible that this will live on in another form, in the theatrical musical form.
Now, the workers here are making flags and flagpoles, and it came through in this half-hour documentary, different attitudes, different thoughts about what the flag meant to the people who work there. Can you give us some of the different perspectives that you saw?
Yes. The film is opens with Radissa, our sewing manager, the sewing manager, who fled. She fled Bosnia in the 90s. Her home was bombed. Her country was on the verge of war. And she fled to the United States with her husband and small child. And over the past nearly 30 years, built this really beautiful life for herself. Nice house in the suburbs, big flagpole in front. And she says, America gave me a lot. And I feel like I gave America my best. And so the film starts reflecting on various flag makers' experience of America and of the flag from the perspective of refugees and immigrants. But it also profiles Midwestern born and bred flag makers like Sugar Ray, who is the production manager, who is a Black man in Milwaukee, who is in charge of getting all of the flags out, packaged, all the flagpoles out, and yet has very conflicted feelings about the flag because there's so much inequality still in this country. And what we wanted to do is not make a simplistic story. We really wanted to be able to sit with each flag maker's story and sort of be steeped in their, through their eyes, their feelings about this country and about the flag, and build a much more sort of nuanced view of all of the many feelings around the flag.
And one thing very striking, I wanted to ask you kind of what it was like behind the scenes. Your cameras are there as some of the staff are watching the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, where flags and flagpoles are being waved, in some cases used as weapons. How was the staff who may have made those flags and flagpoles? Yeah. What were they saying to you at that time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the beginning when we started this film, to me, it was like an emotional feeling. Like, why does it feel like the flag sometimes being sort of put out there, it's like either you're with us or against us, you should always stand, like these very sort of monolithic, very strong, either you're with me or you're against me kind of views. And I thought, well, can't I feel mixed, like love this country, but also be heartbroken over some of these things that have happened in this country? And so it was that sort of gray area, but it was this emotional feeling. On January 6th, it was very physical. It was physical, like the flags were literally being used as weapons. And the flag makers are making these flags with such care and such love and such hope. So to see then the flags being used as literal weapons, it was sort of an embodiment of the way that I had felt when we started the film.
And some of the staff there talk about, you know, they feel like there's a little bit of them, their soul that goes into their products, these American flags and flagpoles. Can you talk about this diverse group of people and the commitment they had to this thing they were making?
Yes. Radissa says, you know, every thought that a flag maker is thinking, all the feelings that they're thinking on that day, that literally they it's like their thoughts and their feelings are going into the threads of that flag, that they are literally the threads of our country, which is such a beautiful statement. And later she says, you know, I love this country, but you don't love something because it's perfect. You love something because it's yours, which I loved that statement because it was I think it's quite poetic. I think it's true. We can love this country and still want to make it even better and still want to make it even sort of a more perfect union.
Cynthia, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Cynthia Wade, Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. She talked to us about her latest film she co-directed. It's the National Geographic documentary, The Flag Makers. It debuts today on Disney Plus. And as we heard earlier, the announcement came out today. It is shortlisted for the Academy Awards this year. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, undocumented farm workers play a huge role in agriculture in Wisconsin and around the country. There's a bill in Congress that aims to clarify their legal status, but it's on hold. We'll find out why, look at what the bill would do, and why it is stalled again after being reintroduced over the years. And we all experience loss at some point in our lives. We'll get some advice on coping with it with the author of the new book, Owning Grief, Widowed Young, How I Discovered Gifts in Loss. That and more. It's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.